غابك لبهد يا بس ندي النسرم.
Most of the world believe that 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust.
They deserve it. Issue, then?
And they deserved it, did they?
That's true.
Do you know, anybody hearing you saying that is going to feel more sympathy for Israel because of what you just said.
Hello. Of course, you are listening to Middle East Panorama Show on Resonance FM 104.4 FM, and you've just listened to some people, or a speaker actually, replying to other people in Speaker's Corner about the Holocaust denial. That is the theme of this week's show on Middle East Panorama Show on Resonance, and also we are going to have a controversial figure, controversial writer and activist, Lenny Brenner. Before that, we interviewed Mark Weber. Mark Weber is the director of the Institute of Historical Review. In March 1998, he testified for 5 days in Toronto District Court as a recognized expert witness on the Germany's wartime Jewish policy and the Holocaust issue. Alex conducted the interview with Mark Weber.
According to Wikipedia, the website, your Institute for Historical Review is a leading Holocaust denial organization. As director of that institute, are you promoting the denial of the Holocaust?
Well, that claim is often made by people who are hostile to what we do, and it's not true. For one thing, every responsible scholar of 20th century history acknowledges the great catastrophe that befell European Jewry during World War II. There's no question that the policy of the Nazi government was a very brutal and harsh one, and it took the lives of many Jews. And the IHR itself certainly does not deny what happened to Europe's Jews during World War II. Now, at the same time, we publish a great deal of material over the years which shows that many specific Holocaust claims are either untrue or exaggerated. Now, that does not also mean that the IHR, as an institution, as a organization, makes these claims. We have published a great deal of material like this. At the same time, we've had, at our conferences and so forth, speakers who support the, you might say, orthodox or generally accepted view about the Holocaust as well. The difficulty is that this subject is so politicized and so emotion-laden, it's very difficult to speak about it objectively or dispassionately.
Right. Let's suppose that the number of Jews killed by the Nazi regime is far less than what the mainstream historians have recorded. What does this change in the nature of the Nazi regime, given that the regime did kill large numbers of gypsies and communists and other people, and that it wanted to occupy the whole of Europe, including the Soviet Union?
Right. You put your finger quite on the problem, because we are told over and over that the Holocaust consists of the killing of 6 million European Jews during World War II, as if any figure below 6 million is somehow Holocaust denial. That's part of the problem. It isn't the IHR, it isn't skeptics, you might say, who insist on a given number. We are told over and over by the sort of official media and even in governments that 6 million is the sort of iconic figure. And that's part of the problem, because even mainstream historians acknowledge, and you'll find this in any number of books, that the 6 million figure is really not tenable. Now, it's silly to get into an argument about numbers and say, well, it's really 4 million or 3 million or so forth, because it's still a terrible thing and a catastrophe. But that's part of the problem, is that we're told the 6 million figure has this kind of iconic status, upheld in some countries even by law.
Right. Interesting points. The writer Lenny Brenner calls the Institute of Historical Review a neo-Nazi institute. What do you say to that?
Well, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, any number of Even Jewish scholars have spoken at our conferences, have contributed to our journal. We have and are proud to have the support of people of every possible political background, religious background, racial background, including Jewish supporters. One example of that is that one recent conference, one of our speakers was John Sack, who is a prominent Jewish American journalist and author. And we've had other Jewish speakers, too, at our conferences over the year. John Sack, in an article he wrote about the conference for Esquire magazine, a prominent magazine here, said that the claim that the IHR is a neo-Nazi organization or whatever is just simply not true. But I can understand how some people make that charge. But that, again, points up the problem, is that the accusations of being neo-Nazi or anti-Semitic are thrown around all too quickly and all too easily in our society.
In the aftermath of David Irving's trial, I'm going to read a bit of what you wrote. But this is what you wrote. The sentence points up a blatant double standard that prevails in Austria, France, Germany, Switzerland, and some other European countries that punish anyone who challenges the prevailing orthodoxy about the Holocaust. And then you go on, how could you equate the Holocaust denial to the depiction of the Prophet Muhammad, as you do in your later writing, by some cartoonists? How do you equate?
This point has exactly been made by any number of other intellectuals and scholars. I was pleased to see in the Jerusalem Post yesterday an op-ed piece, an editorial piece, which made exactly the same point, that there is an inconsistent standard of free speech in these European countries, which say that even truthful statements about the Holocaust that are considered downplaying the Holocaust can earn a person a fine or a prison sentence, but that publishing cartoons or essays that are offensive to Muslims or even Christians are protected on the basis of freedom of speech. But there's just obviously a blatant double standard, and I've been pleased that in the aftermath of the sentencing of David Irving, there has been very widespread, virtually universal, condemnation of the sentencing of a man for remarks made in very small meetings 16 years ago that in any other context, in any other way, would be considered ridiculous. And the main and most obvious proof of the absurdity of these laws is that they criminalize dissent about only one chapter of history. The only chapter of history that is protected, as it were, or criminalized in this way is discussion about the Holocaust, at least in most of these countries. And a principle or a principle that's applied selectively is not a form of justice, it's a form of injustice. And the whole world, I think, acknowledges this kind of double standard.
Do you adhere to the idea that the current mainstream understanding of the Holocaust is the result of a deliberate Jewish conspiracy created to advance the interest of Jews at the expense of other nations?
No, I wouldn't say that. First of all, that there was a Holocaust, that is a genocidal catastrophe or whatever, treatment of Jews, is something that every reasonable and knowledgeable person acknowledges. But it's also absolutely the case that the Holocaust has come to play in Western society this major role that is so politicized and so used to further Israeli and Jewish Zionist interests that it does play this kind of role. I mean, that's acknowledged even by any number of Jewish writers and intellectuals. That's why we have Holocaust Remembrance Days, and we have Holocaust museums, but no comparable remembrance for, say, the larger number of victims of Soviet communism. I mean, part of the reason has to do with the fact that the victors in the Second World War were the United States, the Soviet Union, and Britain, and so forth. And so the victims of, say, Soviet communism or Stalin, whose number scholars readily acknowledge vastly outnumber those of Hitler, are not remembered in the same way. But one of the most unfair and blatant manifestations of the Holocaust story is that we're in effect told that Jewish victims deserve to be remembered and memorialized more than non-Jewish victims. And this is just really wrong.
So you disagree with certain groups, Hamas, for example, who argue that the so-called Holocaust is an alleged and invented story with no basis?
No, I mean, the IHR does not say that. And again, as I've stressed several times during this even brief interview, the fact that there was a catastrophe and the death of many, many people, many Jews in Europe during World War II as a result of the policies of the Nazi government is something that we acknowledge and that I think every reasonable person acknowledges. That's why I never use phrases like the Holocaust is a myth or so forth, because it's not only, you know, imprecise and ambiguous, but it's just not an accurate reflection of the reality.
Mr. Weber of the Institute for Historical Review, thank you very much for joining us here today.
That was Mark Weber from the Institute of Historical Review. You are listening to Middle East Panorama Show on Resonance. Before we listen to Lenny Brenner's view, we're going to listen to very short interviews, very ordinary people, a Muslim Jewish person, and also an Egyptian-American citizen or Jewish-American who is living in London.
Did the Holocaust exist?
Explain.
There are some people who argue that the Holocaust exists. 6 million people were killed.
Tell me what the Holocaust
is. Did the Holocaust against the Jews, that means that the Nazi regime killed 6 million people using, for example, the gas chambers. There are other people who argue that the Holocaust didn't exist, and they call them the Holocaust deniers.
So am I a Holocaust denier, you mean?
No, I said, do you think the Holocaust exists or not?
So you want to know if I'm a Holocaust denier, yeah?
I want to know if you're a Holocaust denier or not Holocaust denier. I don't know your
answer. The thing is, when you asked me, did 6 million Jews die?
I didn't ask that. I said, did the Holocaust against the Jews exist?
Yeah, you asked me about 6 million Jews.
No, because you asked me, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so if you ask me, did the Holocaust happen, do you mean, did 6 million Jews die?
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. Okay. Maybe 6 million died, maybe 6 million didn't, maybe 1 million did, maybe 2 million, but who knows? I don't. I don't know. Something happened, but how many died? I don't know. You keep on saying 6 million, then...
But the...
Some. 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, 5, I don't know. Black people, homosexuals. How many of those Jews that died were handicapped or weren't handicapped? How many?
Do you think there has been only one Holocaust in history?
Depends what you mean by Holocaust. Black people say they have their Holocaust. So there's two. But then Jews take the word Holocaust and apply it to themselves and deny everyone else the use of the word. Same way with Semitism. They take Semitism and they don't allow anyone else to use it. So I'm not anti-Semitic. If I tell someone if I don't like Jews, I'm just anti-Jewish.
Do you consider, for example, the killing of millions of Red Indians as...
Well, there's three Holocausts then. I'm sure you can add to how many Holocausts there was, but they're not important because 6 million Jews died. So this is what we must remember and this is what we must care about. So to hell with everyone else, and let's remember that 6 million Jews died so that it never happens again.
So is it because politically used?
Is it political and racially?
That was a Muslim and from Speaker's Corner. So it doesn't represent, of course, my view or Resonance FM view. Next is a Jewish person.
You can deny everything if you like.
I can deny everything.
Now, if you want to deny, if you want to ask people who were there, there are still people alive who lived through it, they can tell you all about it.
So if I say the Holocaust didn't exist, what would you do to me?
It's like saying America doesn't exist. You can say it if you like. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't change facts.
But is it right to imprison him, imprison David Irving for 3 years?
It depends what he is trying to achieve by denying the Holocaust. If he's trying to make racial incitement, then he has to be locked behind bars. But if he's just talking rubbish, then there's no reason to put him behind Well, it's because of that.
It's also the same thing to put Abu Hamza in prison because he just spoke.
People who try to raise racial incitement shouldn't be allowed to go around because they're liable to bring about another Holocaust.
How many people did David Irving or Abu Hamza kill?
I've got no idea.
How many people are incited hatred and went to Iraq or Afghanistan for a war and killed people there?
I have no idea about that either. I only know that racial incitement causes a great deal of trouble and a great deal of pain and suffering, and it shouldn't be allowed.
Last question. If one individual says something, if you oppose it, you call it racial hatred. And if the state says something which turns to be a lie, which is more detrimental?
Obviously, the higher position a person holds, the more careful he has to be about what he says.
Thanks.
And the last of you, and the shorter one, by the Egyptian-American.
Jewish ancestry.
They don't mind insulting the Muslim world, but when it comes to Judaism, they even have laws against even speaking of, contests of the Holocaust or something like that. So it's really a complete double standard.
So you think people have the right to say the Holocaust didn't exist?
People should have the right to say whatever they want.
So why in the West now there is a law that prohibits people or bans people to say that the Holocaust didn't exist?
I mean, Britain.
Well, that's... I think that's from two things. Pressure of the Jewish communities on pushing for these laws, and partial European guilt for the fact that, yes, Jews were among the people that were killed in World War II. They were not the only people that were killed in World War II. And it's also the reason why the whole state of Israel exists, is to sort of Europe making up for killing too many Jewish people during World War II.
You are listening to Middle East Panorama Show, and we've just listened also to some views about the Holocaust and the Holocaust denial and so on. We are going to have another view from a person who actually he was smeared by the national director of the Anti-Defamation League, Abraham Foxman. And this person is going to interview. He thinks that there was a plot he thinks there was a plot to stigmatize his book, 51 Documents on Amazon.com. And the plot, he thinks, was by the Board of Deputies of British Laws. He will be with us on the phone, and he considers the Institute for Historical Review as a neo-Nazi institute. And although you heard that Mark Weber refuted that the institute is a neo-Nazi organization. To give you a very short background about Lenny Brenner, he is an American author and activist. And he was born into an Orthodox Jewish family. With Hugh Newton, he was founder of the Black Panther Party in America. He was an anti-war activist from the first days of the Vietnam War. speaking frequently at rallies in the Bay Area. Lenny Brenner is the author of four books, Zionism in the Age of Dictators, The Iron Wall, Zionism Revisionism from Jabotinsky to Shamir, Jews in America Today, and The Lesser Evil. It's a study of the Democratic Party. His books have been favorably reviewed in 11 languages by prominent publications, including The Times, The London Review of Books, Moscow's Izvestia, and The Jerusalem Post. On the other side, his writings are accused to be anti-Semitic by historians like Walter Lacker and others. In 2004, Lenny Bremer edited Jefferson and Madison on Separation of Church and State, writings on religion and secularism. Lenny Bremer, hello.
How are you?
Lenny Bremer, by the way, I think you are 76 years old.
No, I'm about to be 69.
69, because I've got here, in 1952, at the age of 19...
No, at the age of 15.
You turned to Marxist philosophy.
Yes, at 15.
At 15.
In 1952.
So, okay, we should edit the information on wikipedia.com then.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the advantage of wikipedia.com, that we can edit it if there is something wrong, not like many other mainstream documents.
Okay.
You've listened to some of the views about the Holocaust, haven't you?
Yes.
Right. So we're going to start with, do you have any comment on what you have listened to?
Well, there are obviously a lot of different issues that are sort of thrown together, like was there a Holocaust? How many Jews? If so, how many Jews were killed in it? Et cetera, et cetera. What do people think of organizations like the Institute for Historical Review? But these are all separate questions. Now, let me give you some of the factual material that I know from, you know, scholarly research that I think can set people's minds at ease. The number 6 million Jews was the number given by the American prosecutor at Nuremberg. He chose that number from two numbers that had been given out by Adolf Eichmann in 1944. Eichmann told a Hungarian Zionist who he met in Budapest that he was going to kill 6 million Jews. But then, that was in like the spring of 1944. But in the autumn of 1944, let's say around September, October, by that time he realized that Germany was going to lose the war, etc., etc., and they began to break up, you know, sort of start moving into exile. The Nazis started moving into exile. He used the number 5 million. Now, the prosecutor chose the 6 million number over the 5 million number. That, you know, it's a prosecutor's decision, so to speak. Okay. Now, many years later, various scholars began to look at the numbers of Jews who were killed. And the best number that people have come up with, after checking all the censuses in all those different countries that were Germany, Poland, Hungary, Romania, et cetera, the best estimate is that it was 5,200,000 or more, but less than 6 million. I mean, there are questions that come up that only demographers can really understand. Like, you can figure out what the average lifespan of Jews were in Poland. So, if someone, by the statistics before the war, you could figure out that X number of Jews would have died by 1945 anyway, just of natural causes. So, Hitler invades Poland in 1939, he kills X number of Jews. Do you count some Jews who would have died naturally as being killed by him, et cetera, et cetera? These are scholars' questions, you know, of concern to demographers. But as I say, taking the most rigorous approach, it's at least 5,200,000. That's the number. Now there are other people. Who
Lenny, sorry to interrupt you because we don't want to carry on for about this minutiously about the numbers. But there is, I can understand that at least between 5 and 6 million Jews were killed by the Nazi regime. Right. So, but the question which is more relevant to us today is the Holocaust deniers have political motivations?
Yes, well, there are, let me put it this way. I break down Holocaust deniers into two categories. There are the people like the Institute for Historical Review, which I see as simply explaining away Hitler. He wasn't as bad as he's made out to be. There's no written proof that he signed an order to kill the Jews, etc., etc. That's one thing. On the other hand, there are millions, hundreds of millions of people in the Islamic world who have some believe in some form of Holocaust denial, because in their minds they're trying to somehow feel that Zionism in Israel is less justified if there were less Jews killed. Now the reality is that the Zionists played a disgraceful role in the Holocaust. The one group among the Jews that were most willing to collaborate with the Nazis and started from 1933 on were the Zionists. They are the people least deserving of any efforts during the Hitler period. But instead of focusing on what the Zionists did and didn't do for the Jews and did for the Nazis and so on and so forth, many of these people just simply have invented their own Holocaust. Let me give you an example, and a very important one. I wrote a book called The Iron Wall, Zionist Revisionism from Jabotinsky to Shamir, and it, of course, also deals with the Holocaust. The book was pirated in 1988 by a Iranian newspaper, Etelat, okay, and was run as a series, and then it was printed as a book, okay, and without my permission, understand, as called Moshte Ahar Ananin. My book is called The Iron Wall. They changed it to Iron Fist, okay, and then they put in a footnote in the book, okay, saying, quote, the figure 6 million as the number of Jews who were killed by the German Nazis, which is always bandied about by the Zionist propaganda agencies to make people feel sorry for them, provoke sympathy, and drag Jews to Palestine, is so fantastic that it could in no way be accepted. For by looking at existing documents, the number of European Jews massacred by the Nazis could not be greater than 1 million. Now, that's what this Farsi Iranian translator put in as a footnote into my book. So he not only pirated the book, but they invented a Holocaust of only 1 million Jews. Now, what infuriates me is that the Zionists hate my book because it exposes them, and instead of, you know, so to speak, reading my book and taking the lessons from it, they just suck that out of their thumb. And now, when you look at Amin Jihad and what he's talking about, the Holocaust, it's 1 million, there ought to be a test, etc., etc. The fact of the matter is, as I say, the scholars went and looked at all of the things, that not only the Holocaust, all of World War II, every aspect of World War II, is the most studied thing in human history. You can't even begin to imagine how many books, serious and important books, have been written on every aspect of a World War II. It was a world war. Now, for example, not only were over 5 million Jews murdered because they were Jews and for no other reason, but about 300,000 or 400,000 gypsies were murdered. Okay? Now, very few people talk about the gypsies because the gypsies are a very poor and disperse people all over Europe. They don't have a big lobby like the Zionists do, et cetera, et cetera. The UN just had a Holocaust memorial. She talked about, and Kofi Annan talked about the killing of the Jews and other minorities. I was there for the event in the UN. He never even mentioned the gypsies.
There are also communists who are killed there.
Oh, yes, yes. And for example, the Red Army, the Soviet Army, when they were captured, they were killed. They were just starved to death. In other words, American soldiers were, put in prisoner of war camps, British soldiers, so on and so forth. Virtually the whole Soviet army that was captured died of starvation or disease, etc. Not only that, but
Lenny, let's go back to the Arab-Muslim world. And just also to remind our listeners that you are listening to Middle East Panorama show on Resonance. Going back to... There is a famous, or just also, like, I think you agree with the following: fools outnumber the wise in every country in the world.
That's one of my favorite proverbs.
Okay. And also in another occasion, and it was on a conference in Egypt, I believe, you said Arabs and Muslims, like everyone else, divide into smart and stupid. Smart Arabs and Muslims study real history. Stupid Arabs and Muslims, like nationalists and fanatics of all religions everywhere, develop fantasy solutions to real problems. Is that also applied to or regarding to the Holocaust denial?
As far as Arabs and Muslims in general are concerned, I would say that as I say, I wrote in 1982, after the Sabra Shatila thing, that the Palestinians have to have a solution to their problems. It's impossible in the modern age to live under oppression without either getting rid of the oppression in the real world or getting rid of it in your head. But you have to solve the problem. And as I say, there are many people in the Arab world who solve the problem in their head rather than in the real world. I would divide the Arab and Muslim world into left and right. What I have found is that I know by now hundreds of Arab leftists and Muslim, Iranian leftists, leftists from Pakistan, whatever, etc. They have no problem with my book and my understanding of the Holocaust and Zionism and Nazism, etc. It's the right wing which doesn't have a real understanding, a modern sociological understanding of the Arab world and the Muslim world, that doesn't understand the Zionist world and the American world. In other words, when Zionism was patronized by the British openly said, Winston Churchill openly said, look, you have Jewish leftists all over Europe, they're agitating for socialism, etc., etc., we're in danger from them. Send them to Palestine, they're no danger to us. That was Winston Churchill.
Let's go. Before we carry on with the more about the Middle East and specifically Israel, actually, I'd like to quote Churchill. Quote: "Some people like Jews and some do not, but no thoughtful man can doubt the fact that they are beyond all question the most formidable and the most remarkable race which has ever appeared in the world." Is that true?
Well, what he meant was that they have the potential of the greatest good and the greatest evil. The greatest good is they work for British imperialism, and the greatest evil is that they work against it, all right? In other words, the villain, if you read that further, you'll see, I think you're reading that from the document that I have in 51 documents?
Yeah, indeed.
Yes, okay. What he's talking about is that the great villain in the world is Leon Trotsky. All right, and the communists, because they want to get rid of imperialism. They're monsters, all right? On the other hand, there are these wonderful fellows like Chaim Weizmann, the president, who later became the president of Israel, and all they want is for the Jews to go off to Palestine. Now, you know, I mean, understand, this is coming from the ultimate imperialist, Winston Churchill. As far as he was concerned, the Arabs, the Muslims, the blacks, the Hindus, you know, the colonial world was a doormat for the various imperialist powers.
Okay, that was Winston Churchill. What about the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that said that the Holocaust was, quote, a myth that had been promoted to defend Israel, ramping up his rhetoric and triggering a fresh wave of international condemnation?
Well, all right. Well, like I say, look, one of the leading...
The question, Lenny, the question is, in this particular context of time and space, what was behind the Iranian president's declaration?
As I was saying, they under that regime 20 years ago, in 1988, they were already putting in that cutting the number from 6 million to 1 million. They put it into a pirated version of my book. Basically speaking, as I say, what they're trying to do is solve the problem of Zionism, discredit Zionism, without studying it. Now, my attitude is, you study, whether you like something or you don't like something, you study it scientifically. You figure it out on the basis of its record, its history. You don't invent the history and paste it on to the Zionists or the Americans or the Iranians, et cetera, et cetera. Every, you know, Zionism leaves a paper trail, if you know, you know, I'm using an American term, you know, when the prosecutor is looking for a criminal scandal, I mean, he looks through the bank books and so on and so forth for the paper trail. In 1933, the German Zionists sent a message to the Nazi government saying, hey, we want to collaborate with you, etc., etc. You know, on the basis, you don't want Germans to marry Jews, we don't want Jews to marry Germans, let's get together and make a deal. They made a deal called the Haravara, the trade agreement, the transfer agreement. They were selling German goods in the Middle East, in return for getting the Germans to send more Jews to Palestine, etc., etc. In 1940, Yitzhak Shamir, he later became the Prime Minister of Israel, his movement, the Stern Gang, offered to go to war on Adolf Hitler's side. Now, in Europe and in America, if you show that and document it to Americans, or Europeans, they're shocked and scandalized at the criminal nature of Zionism. But instead of doing that, Ahmadinejad does is he simply conflates, puts together Zionism and the Jews. In other words, instead of seeing the Zionists as one political ideology among the Jews of that day, only one, He sees the Zionists as somehow or another. If the Holocaust really happened, if 5 million, 6 million Jews really were killed, then somehow in his mind, if you carry his logic to the full extent, if that's what really did happen, then somehow it justifies Zionism. But it doesn't, because Zionism did not help the Jews in the Holocaust.
Lenny, how do you see the state of Israel today, then? Is it a Zionist, Jewish state, capitalist state, I don't know, a socialist state? What sort of state is it?
Let me put it this way. It's got a prime minister who is brain dead and whose son is in jail for corruption. So that's the starters, all right? At this particular point, Zionism is beleaguered. I mean, that wall that it's putting up is like a wall of desperation, if you follow me. Not so much militarily as politically. It's isolated. When I wrote Zionism in the Age of the Dictators, it was published in 1983. in the United States, there was hardly any anti-Zionist movement. Today, there are anti-Zionists on every important college campus in America. And the Zionists are feel surrounded and beleaguered. But what I find is that the Palestinians and the progressive Israelis do not have what we call their act together. They do not yet have a strategy for beating Zionism. And let me put it this way. I credit Hamas with getting Israel out of the Gaza Strip. I mean, if it weren't for Hamas, Israel would still be in the Gaza Strip. But if the Palestinians want their rights in all of historical Palestine, from the ocean to from the sea to the river, you know, from the Mediterranean to the Jordan, then they have to figure out a strategy as to how to take apart the Israeli state. Because I remind you that Israel has 200 atom bombs, and as long as there is an Israeli state with even one atom bomb, it's aimed at the Palestinians and the Arabs and the Muslims and so on. So the question is, how do you take that state apart and dismantle those atom bombs? The only way you can do it is by uniting the Palestinian people with the progressive minority of the Israelis and the progressive millions all over the world who are now anti-Zionist, etc., etc. You and I have heard people talk about Israeli apartheid, again and again and again. If we had a penny for every time a Palestinian talked about Israeli apartheid, you'd be the richest person in the world. But if you're talking about Israeli apartheid, where's your African National Congress? Where is your organization that unites Arabs, progressive Israelis, in one organization and demonstrates and marches on the Israeli government on symbols of religious discrimination or ethnic discrimination and brings down the Israeli government like the apartheid regime? You know, the Israeli government is very strong, but so is the apartheid regime. But it is gone. It is history.
Lenny, we don't have so much time. Let's just try to round up. I believe you are still a Marxist and you are analyzing the world from a Marxist point of view. And yes. And as a Jewish person also, how do you see the future, not only of the Middle East in particular, but how do you see the future of the world? I mean, given the some changes going on in Europe, but not in particular in Latin America.
Well, it seems to me that if you look at the historical period behind us, that you have two things happening at the same time. That number one, there is no doubt that imperialism is collapsing. I mean, there is no longer a real British Empire, a French Empire, and so on and so forth. And the Americans are much weaker than ever before. They're not in the Canal Zone, for example. I mean, the Panama Canal Zone, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, the oppressed people of the world do not have their act together either. I mean, you're talking to me from Britain. I've been there 11 times, so I know a little something about Britain. You still have there a monarchist Labour Party. You know, in other words, here's this party that's an ally of the United States that comes out of the trade union movement, out of the poor, et cetera, et cetera. And it still has the Queen of England running around and a whole aristocracy, et cetera, et cetera. So everywhere in the world, I see a sort of a gap between what is needed and what people are thinking. On the other hand, we have now a higher percentage of educated people everywhere in the world. And it means that if we get our act together and come up with correct strategies, that we can put more people onto the streets and bring down governments than ever before. Shakespeare put it very well in Julius Caesar. He said, the fault of Brutus lies in ourselves, not in our stars, that Caesar is so great and we are so small. We have to get our act together. The Palestinians, the Arabs, progressive Israelis, progressives everywhere, have to make the demand. Israel ends all discrimination against all Arabs, against all Muslims, Christians, etc., etc. The UN promised the Palestinians the right to return. They want it. They want to come and live in peace with any of the Israelis that want to live in peace with them. And they I'll tell you, what the Palestinians should do is sit down and write a constitution for a democratic secular state and present it to the world, present it to their own people, present it to the Israeli people, present it to the world, and win support for a positive program. A constitution guaranteeing freedom of religion, protection of shrines, etc., etc. In other words, really sitting down and coming up with a program that makes sense to a lot of people. Until they do that, they're going to be just X number of dead Palestinians, Y number of
Lenny,
dead Israelis.
Lenny Brenner. Sorry to interrupt you because it's the time,
yes.
The time problem. Thanks for joining us, and you, if you want, you can stay with us because we have about 12 minutes interview, and it is very interesting because the interview it's about Marx. Last night, Marx also was a Jew, and then he became an atheist, and he became a communist, and so on. So, and according to a poll by Radio 4 in Britain, the listeners of Radio 4 recently voted Karl Marx the greatest philosopher of all time, and a decision with which historian Eric Hobsbawm would not disagree. Actually, I'm mentioning Eric Hobsbawm because he gave a talk last night during the Jewish Book Week here in London. Accompanied with Jacques Attali, who is an eminent economic advisor, and he was a special advisor to François Mitterrand in 1990. Eric Hobsbawm is one of Britain's most celebrated historians, and he came to the UK from Germany in 1933. So he also has this Jewish and German maybe background. So we are going to listen to this, and it's also something you might like. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, the session of tonight. What is interesting about it?
Oh, that's for me to find out, isn't it? I read an article about Attali in the Saturday's Guardian. I thought he had some interesting ideas about kind of distinction between religions. He had some ideas about the future, I think he mentioned, which is something that interests me. So I wanted to hear what he said also in relation to Marx. Looking forward to it.
Do you think, in your opinion, do you think Marxism today can explain many things still?
I don't know enough about Marx to comment.
Because, you know, Eric will speak from that perspective.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But I'm pretty ignorant in relation to Marxism, so I couldn't really comment on that.
Because they're two very good intellectuals, so I'm quite interested to see what they're going to say to it and debate with each other.
And Marxism today, still relevant?
Well, it's as relevant as Darwin is for biology. This is a theory of social evolution. It's like a theory of natural evolution. Well, I'm not sure whether you can call it socialism if they use tanks against workers.
But do you think analysing many topics, topics, for example, religion, as the gentleman said, or social problems, from Marx's perspective?
Well, it's interesting because it's a theory of political economy, and we live in a capitalist society, so it explains. And he lived here. He's a Londoner. He was one of our illegal migrants, or bogus asylum seekers, or whatever they like to announce them in the Daily Mail.
Mm. Do you already have an idea about the contributors?
I've read both of them. Yeah. Mm. So, well, no, they're good. They're both very good minds. So it'd be interesting to see what they're debating. And I mean, Attali's take will be. He worked for a social democratic government, so he's actually knows the problems of putting theory into practice.
The title.
What's the title? What's the title?
There's a press opportunity.
Well, I can't remember the title. That's okay. What are you interviewing for?
So you are interested to listen to...
Well, no, to Eric Hobsbawm and Jack Attali, the two names that have been interested to me for a number of years. So just to hear them speak is...
They are going to speak about...
About Marx, yeah.
About Marx.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
The rejuvenation of Marx.
Rejuvenation. Is Marxism still relevant today?
Of course.
To analyze the world.
Yeah, of course.
What, in what sense? I mean, after all that talk for 15 years of the death of communism and Marxism in the mainstream media. So why are people still interested in listening to these people?
Why is people interested in listening to any philosopher? I mean, but he has a view which was distorted by the communists, and I think it's a... time he was rejuvenated and get back to his essential truths, I think, which have been lost over the years.
What is interesting about tonight's session? All this long queue.
Well, I'm seeing an historian that really shaped my whole view of history for many, many years. So that's why I'm here.
So we are interested in Marxism as a theory.
Yes, Marxism as a theory, and particularly as it applies to history.
And do you think that Marxism is still relevant today to analyze the world's problems?
Yes.
Are you more interested in Eric or in Jack?
In Eric. Because I'm an historian.
Okay. Historian in what?
A historian of capitalism in Scotland and common land.
And do you think that socialism is still a project for future?
I think it probably will be, yes.
What about all the talk of more than a decade from the mainstream media and books and historians, the death of communism, the death of Marxism?
They said that about feminism too, but I don't think I believe it.
Can I help you? Can I comment on something?
Yeah, if you want.
Yes.
Tonight's session? What is interesting about it? Tonight's session
is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Why?
People are inclined to talk about the death of communism. It hasn't really been given a try yet. I think it's going...
What do you mean? So what sort of society exists in the Soviet Union?
The Soviet Union, not a proper communist society. Not,
what was it then?
Not as Marx envisaged it.
What was it then?
What was it? It was a corrupt, totalitarian dictatorship. It wasn't a democracy. Proper communism is a democracy.
So why they couldn't implement communism in Russia?
Because the social problems were too huge to apply communism to Russia. It hasn't worked. It hasn't worked anywhere. But it's... may work again, may work here.
Pardon me.
We need to give it some time.
So,
who are you working for, sir?
Resonance FM Radio.
Really, really full. What?
What's interesting about this session tonight?
You mean, what is it?
Yeah. I've been here for more than 15 years, the death of communism and Marxism, and now I see all this queue to listen to some communist people.
Well, this is what I was just asking myself. Is this the history of the Jews happening here? All the Jewish Marxists in the world.
Oh, is it because Marx was a Jew before he became an atheist?
No, it's because the Jews tend towards left, as you know very well. And who are you? I'm not telling you.
I am from the Radio Resonance FM.
All the secrets of the universe for nothing.
The radio is Resonance FM.
Which country is that?
It is in London, based in London, but it is also listened worldwide on the web.
I came here to see whether the professor had changed his ideas in light of history.
So what are you expecting then?
Well, I'm expecting him to suggest that perhaps he was a little bit wrong, you know.
In what sense?
But he's about 90. He's about 90, so I don't think he will. So I'm joking. I'm just jokes.
So do you think Marxism is still relevant to analyze world conditions today?
I think there isn't a man wise enough in this universe to be relevant to the human condition, because we never, ever learn from anything.
I'm interested in Hobsbawm. I've read a lot of his books, and I want to see how today he will defend the survival of Marxism, and which is going to be an uphill struggle, no doubt.
What is irrelevant about Marxism today, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the death of communism, and so on?
Well, I mean, some of the ideas are still very active and alive, you know. When you see the things that go wrong with the capitalist system, you start scratching your head.
Have you heard about what's going on in Venezuela and Latin America?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Anything relevant from Marxism to be...
I doubt whether it's very Marxist, but people who shout and say we are Marxists very often are not, you know.
I just want to hear what they have to say about communism, which I don't think exists in the world today in its pure form.
Has it ever existed?
It's existed, but with very small groups who tried to create... I think the very early kibbutzim in Israel were probably as near enough as you get to real communism, but they failed.
The young people interested in listening to Marxism or some analysis of Marxism?
We're students at Goldsmiths in southeast London. So we just came because we love Eric Hobsbawm and we wanted to hear what he has to say about Marxism.
I've got an essay to write on Marxism. So
what essay?
It's just about Marxism, a Marxist essay.
Resonance.
It's Resonance. Hello.
Hello.
What would you... What do you want to know?
What's interesting about the session of tonight?
I don't know. You better ask him because
the noise.
The noise. Are you interested in Marxism?
Yes.
Do you think Marxism is still relevant today?
Of course. Of course.
Marxianism, not Marxism. There's a difference.
What's the difference?
Well, you'll find out. Hear Eric Hobsbawm speak.
You have said it 42 means, at least I'd have understood.
That's a good one.
Well, I'm a historian, and I've always admired Eric Hobsbawm, and very interested to see what position he takes. He was a communist all his life, and to see whether he still believes in elements of Marxism. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Jacques Attali also believes that Marx is still relevant.
Do you believe in Marxism yourself?
I think certain of his ideas are relevant, yes.
For example?
Well, first of all, the idea about globalization, about capitalism spreading everywhere, certainly relevant. And the fact that our societies are becoming more and more capitalistic and more market-oriented. I mean, that isn't exactly what he predicted, because he predicted that labor would react against that, and right now there aren't too many signs of that happening in Western Europe. Though, you know, there are some signs in France, for example, and...
What about all the talk of last 15 years about the death of communism and Marxism?
Well, there are all kinds of socialism. There's democratic socialism and there's a more totalitarian form. And the democratic form hasn't really been tried, so it's untested. So there's still interesting things to say about it.
Are you following what's going on in Latin America, and especially in Venezuela?
Oh, yes, yes, I am.
So anything from Marxism could be relevant there?
Well, of course, these governments represent the poorer people, and they're trying to get better health services, education, as well as some land reform. I mean, they're not explicitly Marxist, but they're tending in that direction, so I think it's particularly relevant to Latin America.
Anything to add? You've been listening.
I've got lots to add. Firstly, I think communism, as it was practiced in Eastern Europe, has nothing to do with Marxism.
What about Russia? Soviet Union?
Nothing to do with Marxism.
Cuba.
A lot to do with Marxism, but not the totalitarian.
China.
Very little to do with Marxism. And I want to say, I think Marxism is very relevant, and I think Tesco is a shining example of that.
Actually, it is only about 30 seconds left from that, and that's Middle East Panorama Show. And by the way, I wasn't allowed to record the speakers, Eric Hobsbawm and Jacques Attali, so that's why we are not broadcasting that. And thank you for listening, and goodbye from Nadim, and thanks for the engineers for the help they've been giving. Thanks. Bye.
Everything else is the class system. Those who own the means of production are accumulating more and more power.
What about human nature? I always